Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. I'm coming to you this week from the beautiful Bitterroot Valley of Montana. Joining me like he does each week is the co-host of this program, the quarterback of this program, Mr. Stone Labanowitz. And Stone is coming to you from his broadcast center in the Sunshine State of Florida. Well, Stone, I feel like I watched something for a good little bit last week that then the NCAA told me didn't happen. I don't know if this is that deja vu thing or the Men in Black thing, but I have a vague memory of some football taking place in the state of Alabama between Mercer and UC Davis. Do you have that same implanted memory, perhaps?
They're trying to make us forget. You're right. I love the Men in Black analogy. Ching! Snapshot, forget it all. But no, it definitely took place.
Well, I think the biggest storyline is Caden Pinnick, the quarterback for UC Davis. This young man, redshirt freshman, came in there and did absolutely everything Davis asked of him, plus a whole lot more. There's one play in particular where the Mercer Bears defensive line had him surrounded like Custer at Little Bighorn, right? And he somehow manages to get away from it, outruns a Mercer linebacker who had a good angle on him to tackle him before the end zone, and dives it in there for 6 points. If that play didn't happen, we're all poor for it, Stone. And I think we are, because that video of it is just an outstanding football play. Maybe one of the plays of the year that doesn't count.
You're not speaking in hyperbole when you're saying that is the play of the year. I think that one right there is hard to beat. It truly is. And I think that play combined with the body of work that Pinnick put together just proved to all of us that they have their guy, that they have a dude in Caden Pinnick. And we spent last week's show talking about how they're jogging out a young guy against this really good Mercer defense. You wouldn't have known how old Caden Pinnick was. You wouldn't have had a damn clue. He played his tail off. He made the right decisions. And for, 75% of the game, they were in the driver's seat and they were cruising to a victory. Things got a little awkward down the stretch when Mercer started to figure it out, but Caden Pinnick is a dude and he's going to be all season long, and I'm glad he introduced himself formally to all of us on national television this past Saturday.
And like you said, Mercer made it a 7-point game, had the ball in UC Davis Aggies territory, and then the lightning came and that was all she wrote. The NCAA declared that contest to be no contest, so it never happened. And in a game that you called last week, and I've kind of not been on their bandwagon, to put it nicely, for a few years now, but you called this upset. Nichols 20, number 11, Incarnate Word 6, and I'm not sure it was that close, Stone.
It really wasn't that close, Kevin. It wasn't from start to finish. And I do want to shout you out because there's not many people talking about Tommy Rybecki's defensive abilities. Obviously a longtime D coordinator for Nichols State, but what a defensive showing from the Colonels. I mean, seriously, to hold an Incarnate Word team that some around the country had in the top five to 6 points, the last time we've seen that happen to the Cards, 2019. I mean, an absolute showing from Tommy Rybecki, an absolute showing from Deuce Hogan, who I hitched my wagon to without seeing him take a snap for Nichols, just kind of diving in, digging into who he is and what he's capable of. I knew he could play, but he completed 21 passes for 2.25 and a touchdown and keep a clean sheet, no turnovers. Kev, I did call this outright that Nichols is going to win this game. I didn't think it would be as straightforward as it was, though. Huge win for the Colonels, but maybe in retrospect it won't be. Can't take anything away from Nichols. They played their tails off and they beat up on an Incarnate Word team that, I'll whisper this when I say it, we knew wasn't all that good.
That Nichols Colonels defense held Incarnate Word to just barely 200 yards of total offense. They got 4 more yards than 200, 188 through the air, and only 16 on the ground. Whew. And on the flip side, you have got to give the Incarnate Word defense some credit. The offense put them in some absolutely horrible situations, and they held Nichols to just 66 yards rushing, but this was not how Nichols usually wins. You usually see them struggle to throw the football over the years, right? Right? But they passed for 221. And like you said, Deuce Hogan was a difference in this one. Great victory for Nichols. Very disappointing start to the season for the Incarnate Word football team. Number 7, Tarleton State 42, Portland State nothing. Tarleton State came all the way from Texas to Portland, Oregon, and they put a whooping on Bruce Barnum and the Portland State Vikings. Bruce Barnum, one of my favorite coaches in America. They really had no answer for anything Tarleton State did offensively. Had a guy who had a couple of interceptions, who we'll talk about in a minute, who was awarded our National Player of the Week. Had a running back, who we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, who rushed the ball very effectively. comfortably for Charleston, and he's also our National Player of the Week. It was a sweep for Charleston in that category. But give Charleston State credit. That's a long trip. Portland is a place where you kind of have to create your own atmosphere. It's not a sold-out stadium. There aren't rabid fans screaming at you. You kind of have to do it yourself. And the Texans really showed no problems going out there and shutting out Portland State of the Big Sky Conference.
Speaking about it in totality, over 300 yards on the ground, they knew that they were better than this Viking squad up front, and they proved it. This was a 42 shutout that surprised pretty much nobody in the FCS world, but nonetheless, Tarleton's off and running.
FBS UNLV 38, Idaho State 31. We talked about Idaho State a lot last week, Stone. I mean, we kind of had to, right? There weren't all that many games in week zero, but I think all the talk that we gave them and the love we showed them was definitely earned. Idaho State played their guts out in this football game and probably should have won it. You can't turn the ball over and kind of play sloppy at times like they did against an FBS opponent and hope to get out of there with a paycheck and a win, but they fought like all hell. This Idaho State team is going to be dangerous in the Big Sky Conference, I think, and here's the reason why. The offensive line was just as good against UNLV as it was last year. They gave up 5 total sacks all season last year, which led FCS football.
This is exactly why we do the job that we do. This game specifically. When you look at Kevin Marshall and his history in the subdivision, when you look at Stone Labanowitz and his knowledge for what is happening in the FCS right now, these guys know what the hell's going on, and there's no other place in the country where you're going to hear, and I know you said it verbatim, that this Idaho State team is going to have a lead in the fourth quarter. Just that statement alone parlayed with the fact that they were 30-point underdogs, and then for that to actually come to fruition and this Bengals team be literally leading twice in the fourth quarter, that alone is just ridiculous. And you also just said that Idaho State should have won this football game. You can absolutely, and I mean absolutely, make that argument. I think that if you were to blindly watch these teams in just black and white uniforms, you would have thought that the Idaho State Bengals offensive line was the FBS unit and UNLV's was the FCS unit. I don't want to jump to conclusions, but this team is going to be a force to be reckoned with in the Big Sky. I really like this team. And when you look at guys like Jordan Cook and Desaun Brooks, like these are older guys, right? These are redshirt juniors, which means they've been in school and been on roster for 4+ years. And they look like it ultimately, Kevin. This Idaho State team, I cannot show enough love to.
And not to put too fine of a point on it, Stone, Cody Hawkins, a fine young football coach. Let's hope the Bengals try to do something contract-wise to keep him around there. He has definitely changed the trajectory of that football program. In the MEAC SWAC Challenge, North Carolina Central 31, Southern 14. North Carolina Central, as advertised. The quarterback, Harris Walker, as advertised. The North Carolina Central defense, as advertised. I'm getting a little tired of saying that phrase right there. But this North Carolina Central team came out, dominated from the opening whistle of this football game. They're going to be a factor in the MEAC this season. And of the two teams that we saw open the season in Atlanta this year, North Carolina Central just might be back there to wind up the season, too, in the Celebration Bowl.
I think this is the team that looks to find themselves down south in that neighboring state here in a few months as well, Kevin. This North Carolina Central team, as they have been the past 2 or 3 seasons under Trey Oliver, is strong as all hell.
And here are the National Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. The FCS Nation Radio National Offensive Player of the Week is Trey Page III from Tarleton State. Last week, Page III, 15 carries, 170 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, 11.3 yards per carry, y'all, and his longest run, 89 yards. Congratulations to Trey Page III for being named the FCS Nation Radio National Offensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. The National Defensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual, is Ty Rawls, also from Tarleton State. Last week versus Portland State, he had 2 interceptions and 2 tackles, 2 huge turnovers for Ty Rawls from Tarleton State, and he is the FCS Nation Radio National Defensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. It's time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from North Dakota State Bison and head coach Tim Polasek, the Citadel head coach Maurice Drayton, Sacramento State head coach Brennan Marion, and South Dakota State head coach Dan Jackson. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
You guys listen to sports radio for the opinions, the takes, the stances, the angles. But sometimes it's nice to hear from the guys who actually wear the headsets on the sidelines on game day. We're going to play you a few of the best parts of the press conferences of the coaches taking part in the biggest games of the weekend. First up, Dan Jackson. His opponent, Sacramento State. The Hornets? Yeah, they've been talking a lot. And in true Jackrabbit fashion, nobody cares. Here's Dan Jackson.
Love where we're at coming out of fall camp, healthy, hungry, fresh. We did a really good job building team chemistry. Feel like the guys are really connected. Coaching staff did a phenomenal job getting them prepared for the season. And I'm really excited about this next phase of getting into the season and playing games. Our guys are fired up to play an opponent that isn't each other, to hit somebody different. And really looking forward to this week, big week in Brookings, in the state, on campus, certainly with students back, concert, and a great opponent coming in on Saturday. So we're ready to go. Guys are itching to get out there on Saturday.
Dan, how unique, I guess, has it been trying to prepare for Sacramento State, given that they have, you know, 70 new players and 50 transfers, and you probably don't have a lot of film on these guys playing as a team?
It's really unique, Zim. Yeah, I think it just puts a higher sense of focusing on us and getting the guys like simple keys and simple calls that we can execute and play fast. You know, as coaches, sometimes you want to look so much into the, you know, into the weeds to try to see what a team could do. Well, reality is they could do a lot of things and they could play a lot of players. We need to be the best version of ourselves on Saturday. That's really where our focus is. And then from a game planning standpoint, you know, you have a feel for what they're going to do offensively, just with a head coach that's been an offensive coordinator. And we feel pretty confident about what we're going to see on defense, too. But on both sides of the ball, in special teams included, we need to be able to adjust. I think that's going to be an important part of the game, to kind of see how the game starts out and what identity that they present, and then be able to have some simple answers to it that our guys know and can go and execute. So.
Next up, Brennan Marion, shot caller for Sacramento State. He wants to let you and the rest of FCS Nation know that he's bringing an old school feel to Brookings, South Dakota. Can't wait. To be honest, I think I'm leaning Sacramento State in this one. I think they win this ball game.
Yeah, I always love when teams think that we're flash or we're, you know, an internet team or whatever. People try to, you know, we're not blind to the fact that people say the things that they say. But I think when you get out there and you see our old school brand of football, it'll be a team that can run the ball, throw the ball vertically down the field, and a defense that can stop the run and play great pass defense and get after the quarterback and affect the quarterback. So I think it'll be a brand of football that everybody will love, because it will be an old school throwback, violent, really get after you type team. It will not be finesse, cute. It will be something where you go, ooh, you know, like when we get out there and get going after people. So I'm excited just to stop all the talk and actually, you know, get to walk it out and live the dream and get a chance to show the mission and show, you know, what we were able to accomplish in bringing these guys here, their talents and abilities, and, you know, the purpose that they play with, and our love for football and our love for our teammates. And then just show the city of Sacramento they have something to be proud about.
I'm excited to stop all the talking and walk it out. That was the head coach for Sacramento State, Brennan Marion. Next up, the guy wearing the belt, defending national champion head coach Tim Polasek of the North Dakota State Bison. Him and his boys, they got to take a trip down south to hot and muggy South Carolina. Their opponent, the Citadel Bulldogs. You better buckle up, Timmy.
Seeing three quarterbacks Saturday?
You know, I got to know it somewhere. It just doesn't matter. We need to dictate the terms to whoever they send out there. And what I'm talking about that is disguises in the back end on third and, you know, seven plus. I think it's really critical run fit wise. Option football, misdirection counters, inside zone, RPO, and screens primarily, right? So when we get these opportunities on third and six, seven, we got to be humming up front, dictating the terms that he's going to have to grind to get himself off the ground. Pre-snap's going to be a grind. That's what I'm excited about. We've had to talk about spying a quarterback. I think Grant's been faced with Nathan, right? Big arm guy. I don't know what they got. Trey is a little bit different look. And so at least we've got some different quarterbacks that provide some different things, where Grant's been forced to talk, okay, when Preston or Cole are in there, and Nathan, because he's a pretty good athlete, we better be really aware of rush lanes. We better be really aware that we might go to a spy situation. And so that's kind of comforting. It just doesn't matter. In first games, we don't know as much about our opponents as they know about us. We have 88% returning Bison. That's something to support if you're a fan. But 88% of our guys were recruited to come here to play. And so at least, you know, there's expectation of the systems and so forth. And I wish I had a better answer for you. I didn't research all of them, and I didn't go look at their high school tape, and I'm just not going to do that.
Not even going to watch the tape, huh? Noted. Up next, Maurice Drayton, head coach for the Citadel Bulldogs. Maurice, bring your lunch pail to work kind of guy. I love it. Line it up.
If you are going to pull an upset, if you are going to pull this off, what is the main thing that you could do that you tell your team, if we do this, we've got a chance against them?
Yeah, so in the first quarter of the season, more games are lost than actually won. Right, so you can't beat yourself. You can't have the pre-snap errors. You have to protect and secure the ball on offense. You have to extract the ball on defense. It's the same things that it would take to win any football game. It's very important that we don't make this bigger than what it is from the football standpoint. Organizationally, this is huge, right? Because of the things I talked about earlier. But from a football standpoint, it's a big, big game only because it's the next one.
Now time for the preview segment. This is where Stone LeBanowitz and I take a trip all over FCS Nation, and we preview the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. Up first, number one, North Dakota State is at the Citadel. Well, Stone, I've been waiting for this one for a long, long time. It's amazing who you can schedule when the NCAA takes away your under-center triple option because you've embarrassed the wrong people with it for years. But this ball game, number one, North Dakota State, with a lot of question marks. Let's face it. The number 17 overall pick in the draft, Gray Zabel, he's not there anymore. Cam Miller, the fine Bison quarterback, he don't play there no more either. So if you're a Citadel fan, and I am, this feels like a little bit of an opportunity. In your place at Johnson Haygood Stadium, in front of the South Carolina Corps of Cadets, in a sold-out Johnson Haygood Stadium. I like our chances better now than I would have a year ago, that's for sure. And this Citadel team last year were in a lot of close ball games, a lot of them. In the fourth quarter, they just didn't know how to win them yet. This would be a huge, huge deal for the Citadel to somehow defeat number one North Dakota State. It's going to be a whale of a ball game. I'm looking forward to it, sir.
I don't know what kind of whale, and for you, you said that you've been waiting for this game for a long time. I've been waiting for, I think, the opposite reason, because I, Stone LeBanowitz, have not known or have not game planned how I wanted to talk about this one, especially on air alongside you, because a lot of the things that you just said I clearly disagree with, and I think majority of FCS Nation will as well. I think the one thing that the Citadel does have going for them is that Cole Payton and guys like Bryce Lance have yet to develop some sort of in-game chemistry. Of course, the argument can be made that they've been practicing together all spring and all summer, all fall camp, and lead up to this very moment, but still, it's a little different when that first whistle blows inside those white lines. So if they do take a little bit to get going, yes, this could be interesting in the first and the second quarter. I think the problem for the Citadel is the style of football that they like to play. They like to keep the offense off the field, right? They like to kill the clock and own the clock, I'm sure, is something that Drayton preaches to the staff and, most importantly, all 100-plus guys on the roster. But so does North Dakota State. They want to keep your offense off the field by converting third and sixes and draw plays, right, on just getting outside of the hash and hitting that tight end, hitting that fullback, that running back in the flat, letting him go for 6, 7, 8 yards, and just converting and moving those chains along and keeping the offense off the field. So both teams just butting face masks. But I think that obviously North Dakota State just has a tad more firepower, and that it's going to bode well for them. They're going to win this game, I think, by a wide margin.
Number 17, Sacramento State, is at number 2, South Dakota State. Well, Stone, the last JV season, yikes, for Sacramento State is going to begin on the road at Brookings, South Dakota. And a lot of talk has come out of Sacramento, California. A lot of hype has come out of Sacramento, California this offseason. We don't have them ranked maybe as high as some other people do, who maybe respond to a lot of hype. But you go to Brookings, South Dakota, I don't care who the old coach took with him and who Dan Jackson brought in for the Jackrabbits. You go there, you're going to be in for a tussle, and it's going to be a physical football game. And I like this Jackrabbit squad. I like what Coach Jackson has done. We're going to get to see Chase Mason with the reins off of him. It's going to be his football team. And they have some pieces that stayed, South Dakota State did. Sacramento State pretty much got a whole new roster, and it could take them a minute to gel together. I don't like this matchup for Sacramento State, but I do for the Jackrabbits, because I think South Dakota State knows exactly who they are, what they want to do, and how they're going to do it. I'm not sure about that for Sacramento State.
Use the phrase whale of a ball game for North Dakota State and the Citadel. This right here is a whale of a ball game for a plethora of reasons. When you talk about the turnover, obviously one more than the other in Sacramento State and the guys that they've brought in, I'm 100% going to go against Kevin Marshall and go against the rest of FCS Nation in the fact that, you know, you can't buy a good football team. There's too many transfers. There's not enough chemistry. I understand the traditional way of thinking, but if you're the Sacramento State team or this staff or these fans who are paying close attention, their boys are just as hungry. They've had just the same amount of time starting in January up until this point as every single football team in the entire country. I think the one person that stands out to me that I think I can buy stock into, especially in this football game, is Jamar Curtis. You bring in a guy like Jamar Curtis, this is an FCS to FCS transfer. This guy in the Patriot League last year, he came from Lafayette, a really good football team in the 2024 season, rushed for 1,200 yards last year, and before that, 1,500 yards. They got three returning offensive linemen who are starters. So I don't want to hear about too many transfers. This team hasn't gelled yet. They got dudes. They got dudes who cannot wait to take that flight cross country to Brookings, South Dakota. They want to be there. They want nobody else in the country right now. They've been chatting. Well, so have the Jackrabbit fans. I think Sacramento State steps up to the plate in this one. And regardless of what anybody thinks, regardless of what Kevin thinks, this right here is a top 25 team. I get all the asterisks. I get not being able to put them there. They got to show us. I get it. Well, they're about to. I think they put up a fight in Brookings, and I think there's a chance they win this football game.
Well, Stone, all that may be true, but I'll one-up you here with a former Patriot League running back transferring to a team that's taking part in this football game. And I'll talk about Julius Lowridge, two-time first-team All-Patriot League selection. And, I mean, all he did at Fordham was have 305 yards and 26 touchdowns and be a two-time first-team All-Patriot League selection. This is a funny place for two really good Patriot League football players to meet, isn't it? In Brookings, South Dakota, both playing for different teams. But I guess that's the way of college football these days.
That right there is my rebuttal for any South Dakota State fan who wants to get on Sacramento State's case for just being loaded with transfers. Your horse, Lowridge, is going against Sacramento State's new horse, Jamar Curtis, right? You both brought in guys to do the job for you out of the backfield. So tomato, tomato, to each their own. Like you said, this is the new world that is college football.
What a time to be alive. Number three, Montana State is at number seven, Oregon of the FBS. What are we going to learn about Montana State in this football game, Stone? The talent level, I think, is just as high this year on the complete and total Bobcat football team. Obviously not the quarterback position. There's never going to be another Tommy Mellott. But Idaho went to Oregon last year and gave them all they wanted. I do remember. I think that this Montana State team isn't going to be as far along at some of these skill positions right off the bat as that Idaho team was last year. But that remains to be seen. I think Montana State can get a lot of things out of this football game. I just don't think they're going to be able to get a victory, and I would be surprised if they're able to keep it close.
I want to see what Vegan can get these guys doing defensively and how they mix it up against an Oregon team. That's what I'm looking for. It's what I think is going to be the most obvious, because I think you're going to see a lot of three and outs and a lot of turnovers from the Montana State offense as they try to find a new identity as they get away from this Tommy Mellott era that has taken over Bozeman for what feels like 8-9 years, but was realistically only 4. Interesting stuff here. But the last opponent you want to see right now is an Oregon Ducks team who is third or fourth shortest odds to win a national championship in the FBS, right?
This next one intrigues me. Number 4, South Dakota, is at Iowa State of the FBS. Aiden Bauman, where'd he start his college career at, Stone?
That would be Iowa State.
I mean, the kid is big and tall and left-handed and can spin it. This is going to be a problem for Iowa State, I believe. I think I saw a line on this one. It's South Dakota is just about a 13.5 point underdog right now. I think they keep it a little closer than that in this one. I think South Dakota has a decent shot if some things can go their way. They're going to need to get a turnover or two. They're going to need to make a play on the special teams. But it would not absolutely, you'd have to knock me over with a feather if South Dakota made this a four-quarter ball game and had an opportunity to steal it at the end. A
lot of parallels here. If you remember Will McIlvain, who was a signal caller last year for Central Arkansas, when he was at Northern Iowa, they played Iowa State, very similar to Aiden. Will McIlvain started. He walked on to Iowa State. That's where he started his career before transferring to the FCS, and he gave Iowa State hell. That was a four-quarter ball game. I think Aiden is a better quarterback than Will McIlvain. And although they're years apart, like I said, I think there are a lot of parallels, and this game shows a lot of similarities. But if you're a Yotes fan and you're listening to Kevin Marshall and Stone Labanowitz right now to hear to see what they have to say on this ball game, I'll give you one thing and one thing only that you can take with you, that you can put in your back pocket, that you can tell your neighbor on why you think it's going to be a close game. Go to this Iowa State schedule and see who they play following South Dakota. Iowa State versus Iowa, the biggest game of the Cyclone season. So what you call this right here is a sandwich spot. This is an Iowa State staff. This group of players are overlooking South Dakota. They have no idea who they are. You can guarantee that 100% of that roster has no idea who Aiden Bauman is and the history that he has with the Cyclones. And all of the film that this staff is breaking down is all Iowa-based, right? Because that's who you're worried about. So this is a sandwich spot. So if South Dakota wants to bow up and make this thing interesting real early, me, you, and a big group of other people would not be surprised. So putting a lot of stock in this Aiden Bauman storyline, and also the fact that Iowa State plays Iowa the following week. So this one could get tricky, and I'm hoping it does.
Number five, Idaho is at Washington State of the FBS. Schools are separated by only 8 miles. And Idaho is going to bring in a very talented roster with a lot of guys coming back and an experienced quarterback. Washington State is bringing in the former head coach for the South Dakota State Jackrabbits and a lot of younger guys from that South Dakota State team last year. I'm not liking how that sounds for Washington State of the FBS. This one's going to be a dogfight, Stone.
I think so, too. I think, you know, the football world, the general fans would be surprised. Oh, my God, Idaho's hanging with Washington State. But these guys got so much to figure out. Like, they just don't know who they are. And you want a dog on Sacramento State for all these transfers and stuff? Well, obviously, Washington State is playing with a new core of guys, a brand new staff that has yet to figure anything out. They've proven nothing to us.
The preview segment will roll on right after these messages from our sponsors. Looking to gain a real edge on game day? GameStrat is the number one choice for in-game video in the FCS and is trusted by championship programs at every level. With instant access to in-game video, lightning-fast uploads, and no internet required, GameStrat helps coaches make real-time adjustments that win football games. It's easy to use, ultra-reliable, and backed by top-rated support. Don't settle for less. Upgrade to GameStrat and keep up with what the top programs in the country are choosing for their in-game video. Visit GameStrat.com to learn more and schedule your demo today. That's GameStrat.com. Number 8, Illinois State is at number 18, Oklahoma, the FBS. What we said about those last two FCS versus FBS matchups doesn't hold, I believe, anything of the same here. Oklahoma is a different sort of a beast than Iowa State or Washington State. If you're Illinois State, you go there and you're just trying to compete, right? You want to win the first quarter, be close at halftime, and hang around for as long as you can and try to make it interesting at the end. I think that's what Brock Spack has up his sleeve for this one. He's just telling his guys, what do we have to lose here? Not much. Quarterback is good for Illinois State. You just got to keep everybody healthy when you come out of this ball game. And what takes place between the white lines in this one isn't as important, the result isn't, as everybody being healthy when it's over if you're Illinois State.
I have nothing to add on that. I think that's beautifully said, Kevin. In the words of you, sir, there's not much to see here.
Presbyterian, or as we call them in South Carolina, PC, is at number 9, Mercer. It's going to be a long day for Presbyterian College, who has the most unique nickname, I think, or mascot in FCS football. They're the Blue Hose, and it goes back to the Scott Irish that settled the glorious Palmetto State of South Carolina and pays homage to them. So Mercer got a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth from the no contest last week. Well, they'll wash that taste clean, and PC won't put up much of a fight here. Number 14, UC Davis, is on the road at Utah Tech. Same outcome here for Davis. Neither of those teams involved in the no contest last week come out of that feeling really good or clean, right? They're both dirty. They're both tainted a little bit. But UC Davis has a little bit tougher of a test on the road at Utah Tech. I expect this ball game will be close for a while, but panic for UC Davis and that group of guys up front on the offensive line who protected him pretty well. Although, you know what? The best plays UC Davis had against Mercer is when that protection broke down. So I'm kind of still scratching my head about UC Davis. Have they reloaded or are they rebuilding this Utah Tech game? If they can manage to play all four quarters of it, that is, and have the game count, will go a long way to answering some of those questions for me.
If you thought last week was a coming out party for Caden Pinnick, well, feast your eyes on this ball game because Utah Tech and that oval brown thing, they love to make it take flight. And they're going to force UC Davis to do so as well. Whether it's 3, 4, 5 play drives that end up in the end zone for Utah Tech, or it's a 1, 2, 3 play drive that ends in an interception, that ends in a quick 3 and out and a punt and put your offense back on the field. There's going to be a lot of points. Could be lopsided the way of UC Davis, but nonetheless, this is a fun game. And if you're looking at an over set around 50, 51 and a half, jam it and jam it hard. Take your money right to the window. This one's going to be fun. And UC Davis is going to come out of here victorious in this one.
Well, you said the UC Davis-Utah Tech game is going to be a fun game. This one here is, it's probably what I think could be the best game of the week if you take out Sac State and South Dakota State, the best FCS versus FCS matchup. Number 15, Richmond, is at number 21, Lehigh. It's a rematch of a playoff game last year. The Lehigh won at Richmond. Richmond is still playing with CAA size and skill guys. Lehigh has some of those same type of fellas on their team, but I think Richmond does have more. Richmond is a new member of the Patriot League this year. Their first game is against Lehigh. Who's going to get the advantage in this league right from the start this year? This is a very interesting matchup. Richmond comes in. They have a chance to set the tone for the whole season. We're new in the league. We're the new bully on the block. Everything comes through us. Lehigh, you just want to capture what you did last year in that playoff game, which was you were fierce in the red zone on defense. Richmond drove the ball up and down the field on Lehigh, but couldn't convert that into points. Richmond's got to do better in the red zone in this one. No field goals, no missed field goals. Get 6 points and kick an extra point. If Richmond can do that, they'll handle Lehigh, I do believe.
Yeah, if you like true FCS football, you're going to love this game. This is highly touted to a lot of us. This is a top 25 matchup nonetheless. You're talking about a Lehigh team against this Richmond team last year in the playoffs and how that one ended up. I know Richmond really thinking about it. You break down all that tape because both teams probably haven't changed schematically a whole lot. So what you see is what you get. You talk about a Lehigh team too. Go back was 2-9 and then go to last season, they were 9-4. That turnaround was huge. So this is a Lehigh team who thinks they're trending upward, and this is a Richmond squad who, like you said, is the new bully on the block. So a lot of storylines going in here. Obviously a new team to the league. There's a lot to watch. There's a lot to pay attention to, and this one obviously will have a huge effect on the top 25 rankings as well.
Gardner-Webb is at number 16, Western Carolina. This one is intriguing to me, Stone. Gardner-Webb was a playoff team a couple of years ago. Then Trey Lamb goes to East Tennessee State, and now he's at Tulsa as the head coach. Gardner-Webb trying to build back up to that level. Western Carolina has never won the Southern Conference Championship, Stone. Not in 49 years of being members of the Southern Conference have they ever hoisted that trophy at the end of the season. Can this be the year? History tells me no. It won't happen. And I'm a historian. But you know who didn't play for Western Carolina all those years that hadn't been able to win much anything, Stone?
Teron Dickens.
That's exactly right. This dude is just a guy who is worth 21 points on his own every time he steps on the field. He's going to make plays nobody else in that league, and very few other people in FCS football are going to have the ability to make. I don't know what you do on defense if you're Gardner-Webb to try to counter that. I think you just do a whole lot of praying and maybe hope he trips or, you know, something, because he is maybe the best offensive player in FCS football, and I believe perhaps his road to the National Offensive Player of the Week begins at home this week in Cullowhee, North Carolina versus Gardner-Webb.
I think it does as well, Kevin. There's not a damn word in that spiel that I'll disagree with right now. If you don't know who Teron Dickens is, well, you're about to find out. And so is Gardner-Webb. This kid is lightning in a bottle. There are plays that he's going to make this weekend that you won't see other quarterbacks make, or you won't see other quarterbacks who even have the ability to make in all of the FCS, and may I argue the FBS. If this kid was 3 or 4 inches taller, he'd be jogging out there against Florida State for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Those are just the facts. What he's going to put on display and what he's going to do for this Western Carolina team is worth 21-plus points, like you mentioned, Kev. I'm excited, and I hate to take away from Gardner-Webb in this matchup because this is a team that has contended in the playoffs recently. This is a team that every offseason knows that they are good from top to bottom, but I just think there's too much skill on the Western Carolina side, and I'm going to say that all season long. I love Teron Dickens. I love Western Carolina this year. I think they climb the rankings, and they climb them fast, and Teron Dickens is going to break scoreboards along the way. I'll be watching this just to watch number 5 take the field.
Number 18, Chattanooga, is at Memphis. Stone, Chattanooga brings in 40 new players. That's rough, man. That's rough. Off a squad last year that was pretty good, but somehow missed the playoffs with all that talent. And you just have to scratch your head and go, well, why? Well, the SoCons, that's all I can say. I had to work that in here in the week one show because for people who don't listen to this show a lot, you're going to hear me say that again. And you're going to hear me say that probably 4 or 5 more times this year. But going on the road to take on Memphis, there, if you're going to play an FBS opponent, there could be tougher places to open the season. I mean, the Mocs have played Alabama and Tennessee recently. So I'd rather have Memphis. And I think I look at this game in a lot of the same ways that you look at Montana State and the Oregon game. Now, Memphis ain't near as good as Oregon, y'all. Don't get me wrong. But Chattanooga is going to learn a lot about themselves in this football game. And I think they're going to like a lot of the things that they find out. My only question is, can they make enough plays and can they find out early enough against an FBS opponent to make this thing interesting?
Yeah, this is the real awkward spot for Chattanooga. You already highlighted you had to replace 40 guys, which is a task that a lot of college football coaches have nowadays, and a lot of college football coaches have problems with nowadays. So if you can put that frustration aside and understand that you're taking the field against a Memphis team, like you said, that isn't the hardest of FBS foes that you could possibly play right out the gates. I mean, it's not a basketball game, right? It's not Penny Hardaway and his squad. So Memphis is gettable, but just not by the Chattanooga team right now. There are too many holes, too many key positions that they've had to replace. And this Saturday is going to be a long, long day for the Mocs.
Murray State is at number 22, East Tennessee State. Well, Stone, we kind of chuckled about it last week that the Buccaneers got 2 FBS transfer quarterbacks that they're going to try to play, but they still only played a game with 1 football. And I don't think they're going to need either of those cats against Murray State, who's not a very good football team right now. They're in year 2 of a rebuild at Murray State that's going to take quite a while after joining the Missouri Valley Football Conference. But this game is more about East Tennessee State, I think. They need to see one of these guys take a step forward at the quarterback position, and it needs to happen sooner than later, or else then the locker room starts to fracture. Then you have camps. One guy's behind McNamara. One group is behind Criswell, and next thing you know, it's 6 weeks in and you're 1-5. That can't happen to Will Healy and this East Tennessee State football team. One of these guys needs to step forward. I don't know who it's going to be, but for the Buccaneers' sake, I hope it's clear, and I hope it begins early on against Murray State at home in Johnson City.
Yeah, this is the opponent that you want, but if you're Will Healy, you need to find out who your quarterback is. You said it, I'll say it. That's the priority here. Is it going to be Cade? Is it going to be Jacoby? We don't know. One of them needs to take the reins, and you'd ask for nobody but a Racer squad to do that against. So for that, I think East Tennessee State's just going to absolutely lay it on them. I think they're going to have their way offensively and defensively, but my eyes, and I think FCS Nation's eyes, should be on this Cade McNamara and Jacoby Criswell battle that if you watch Will Healy's press conference, he still hasn't named a starter. So you'll hear in the next couple of days who that's going to be, but still up in the air. So a lot of question marks, but I do think we'll get them answered here.
Hampton is at number 24, Jackson State, a CAA SWAC matchup here. Hampton is going to be better this year. They have some players, especially along the defensive line. They're going to get after Jackson State a little bit, but that's such a tough place to go in and try and win. And Jackson State has talent in spades. They always do. It's just a matter of can they use it and get the guys in the right positions? The Tigers, I think for them, anything less than a berth in a Celebration Bowl this year is a wasted year, a bad year, and I don't think they're going to allow Hampton to trip them up. I do think this will be a close ball game, though. I'd be surprised if the swing is 10 points either way in this one, Stone.
I would as well. I just like the momentum. It seems that T.C. Taylor has every offseason and how he gets his guys going. And I often will bring this up. If you listen to the show weekly, you will hear me talk about our team's social media pages and how much stock I put into that a lot for Jackson State. This team has a lot of fun in the offseason. This team seems like a tight-knit group. And T.C. Taylor is a drill sergeant. And I say that in a very, very positive light. I like what these guys have, and I don't necessarily like what Hampton has. So I think this is a win the way of Jackson State and the Tigers, but not by much. This could turn into a ball game. It is week one, by the way.
Well, my co-host Stone Labanowitz said that T.C. Taylor is a drill sergeant, and he meant it in a nice way. You can tell y'all that Stone Labanowitz has never worn a uniform of any kind. And in our wild card game of the week, in this one, we have Incarnate Word, who was highly ranked last week. Well, you heard in the recap segment why they're not highly ranked anymore. This one intrigues me. Eastern Washington comes from Cheney, Washington, down to Incarnate Word to take on the Cardinals.
Who knows what we're going to see in this matchup, truly. I think Incarnate Word surprised a lot of people, not necessarily me or you, but they surprised a lot of people last week. And you get to thinking, is Richard Torres the guy? Well, he has a chance to prove it against an Eastern Washington team that is known to give up a lot of points, right? So this could be a high-scoring affair, or it could be another sloppy ball game, right? We really don't know the answer to that. So this one's interesting. I'll be keeping an eye on if Eastern Washington can make the most of their opportunity here.
I think a lot of people are waiting for me to say that Incarnate Word needs to work on the passing game, and they do. But Torres needs to learn how to recognize a blitz, Stone, and diagnose at the line of scrimmage where it's coming from and get the ball out. He was bad last week. And they also need to run the ball a little bit better than they did against Nichols. Now, Nichols' defense had a lot to do with that. But you got to run the ball for better than 16 or 25 or 36 yards, whatever it was, or else you're going to find yourself 0-2 when you started off the year ranking some people's top fives. And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for my favorite time of the week, y'all. This is when Stone Labanowitz and I butt face mask and pick the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. Up first, number one, North Dakota State is at the Citadel.
I like North Dakota State here a lot to a little. I said it in the preview segment, both of these teams want to play the same style of football, but one of them is better at it than the other. Give me the Bison, 48-10.
Well, Stone, you know me, and I'm a realist, and I only deal with things as they are, not as I would have them to be. So that being said, give me the Citadel, 69-3. Not really, y'all. I'm not that delusional. But I know this about the Citadel Bulldogs. They're going to fight. The Citadel Bulldogs are going to come right at the Bison for all four quarters. And they'll earn a whole bunch of respect, but they're not going to win the football game. Give me number one, North Dakota State, over the Citadel at the General in Charleston, 35-20. Number 17, Sacramento State, is at number two, South Dakota State.
I'm doing it. Upset special of the week. Give me the Hornets in a dogfight, 31-27. I think all in all, Sac State just has a little more firepower in the skill position department. I know a certain group of people are going to love to hear that. Sac State has more firepower when it comes to the guys whose hands you put the ball into. They got a lot of guys with big names from big schools who have a lot to prove, and they've heard everything everybody in the FCS nation has had to say. I think they put it on display week one in Brookings. Give me the Hornets, 31-27.
Not me, sir. But you're right. There are so many unknowns in this ball game. But this Jackrabbits team, well, they have guys who don't need to buy a program from the stands to know who all their teammates are. And I think that counts for a whole lot, especially in week one. Take number two, South Dakota State, at home over number 17, Sacramento State, 34-23. Number three, Montana State, is at Oregon.
Not much to see here, folks. Give me the Ducks, 57-13.
I don't think it'll be that lopsided, Stone, but we're going to find out a lot about the Bobcats, like we said in the preview segment. Can Justin Lamson play quarterback? He hasn't played a whole lot of quarterback since he's been in college. They named him the starting QB in Bozeman, and he's going to face a familiar foe in number seven, Oregon, seeing as how he came from Stanford. Can the Bobcats do to the Ducks what Idaho did to them last year? Maybe, but I don't think so. Take FBS, number 7, Oregon, at home over number 3, FCS, Montana State, 42-17. Number 4, South Dakota, is at Iowa State of the FBS.
This is a first half ball game. Although the game won't end there, I do think it's competitive in the first 30. But the Cyclones will come out victorious, 35-21, in what is a pretty good watch.
Very interesting matchup. As we discussed, South Dakota quarterback Aiden Bauman returns to where it all started for him. South Dakota will be a very game opponent in this thing. They're not going to go anywhere, y'all. Iowa State is not going to go running high with this football game. They're going to have to fight to win it. And if they make some mistakes, they won't. But I do like FBS Iowa over number 4 South Dakota, 28-24. Number 5, Idaho is at Washington State of the FBS.
Hoping this one's fun, I just don't think it is. I think Wazoo jumps on them early out the gates. Give me Washington State to win this thing 32-21.
Take Washington State over number 5, Idaho, 34-24. Number 8, Illinois State is at number 18, Oklahoma of the FBS.
Boomer Sooner here all the way. Give me Oklahoma 56-14 on top of the Birds. Long day for Tommy Rittenhouse and Brock Spack. Sad to say, Oklahoma's just not the team you want to see week 1. Brent Venables, come on now.
Not much to see here, y'all, I don't think. Illinois State, a successful ball game here is, honestly, keep everyone healthy and make sure that Oklahoma spells Illinois with 2 L's on that giant check you're going to get. Take number 18, Oklahoma, over number 8, Illinois State, 38-7. Presbyterian is at number 9, Mercer.
I like Mercer, and I like Mercer by a lot here. The Blue Hose are going to get hosed 35-7, Bears victory.
Mercer wins this one big. Take number 9, Mercer, at home, over PC, 41-10. Number 14, UC Davis is at Utah Tech.
Give me UC Davis here. Similar to how we broke down the matchup between the Aggies and the Bears, a bad taste in their mouth. Now, we talked about it being for Mercer, but I do think UC Davis put a lot of bad things on tape too. Utah Tech's a good opponent to correct those mistakes and take it out against. Give me the Aggies 38-24.
As discussed, Caden Pinnick looked outstanding in the game that never was. The Aggies should have no problems with Utah Tech. Take number 14, UC Davis on the road over Utah Tech, 35-13. Number 15, Richmond is at number 21, Lehigh.
Sneaky game of the week here. I know you feel more strong about it than I do, but I like the Spiders here in a squeaker, 28-27, in what is a really, really eventful ball game.
I like Richmond in this one too, but this is a huge test for both of these squads from Jump Street in the 25 season, y'all. Matchup of a playoff game last year in Richmond that Lehigh won, but I like Richmond here. It's going to set the Spiders up to maybe run the Patriot League from its first whistle of the season, first ever game as a Patriot League team. Take number 15, Richmond, over number 21, Lehigh. Spiders win 28-24. Gardner Webb is at number 16, Western Carolina.
I like Western Carolina here. I know I talked about UC Davis and Utah Tech being the high-scoring affair. I think it's actually this one. Give me the Catamounts, 45-21. My goodness.
I like Western Carolina in this one too, Stone, and we talked about it in the preview segment. It's Teron Dickens. He's the difference maker here, and it's going to be for Western Carolina all season. Take number 16, Western Carolina, at home over Gardner Webb, 35-27. Number 18, Chattanooga is at Memphis of the FBS.
I just don't think there's much that Chattanooga can do to stop Memphis here. Chattanooga is going to be trying to find answers on the fly. It's not a good recipe for success when you're on the road in FBS territory. Sharky Waters, give me Memphis, 45 to Chattanooga's 10.
The Mocs have a whole new football team this year. Take FBS Memphis over number 18 Chattanooga, 34-20. Murray State is at number 22, East Tennessee State.
East Tennessee State by a lot. Just don't know how they're going to do it. But give me East Tennessee State, 35 to Murray State, 7.
ETSU is going to play both of their highly touted FBS transfer quarterbacks in this one, but I ain't going to need them, y'all. Take number 22, East Tennessee State in Johnson City over Murray State, 42-10. Hampton is at number 24, Jackson State.
I like Jackson State here. I do think this one will be a bit of a slow burn. It will get wonky. There will be turnovers. So it'll be stay somewhat low scoring. Give me Jackson State 27 to Hampton's 13.
This is a real good CAA versus SWAC matchup here. And I, like Stone, expect it to be a close, hard-fought, physical-type ball game. But I do like number 24, Jackson State, at home over the Hampton Pirates, 31-24. That brings us to the end of another another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted and produced by Mr. Stone Labanowitz. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. And like I always do, y'all, would like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.